There you are. That's where you are. You're there. Hey, everybody. Kevin Goatee, Gutting the Sacred Cow. Wow, I know I say this pretty often, but you aren't going to believe what movie we're doing this week. One of the films we absolutely had on our bulletproof list. You ready? The Dark Knight. It's it. That's it. I'm floored. Someone has decided to go for the holy grail of the Nolan trilogy, and that someone is Mikey Flash. I guess it is true. Some men just want to watch the world burn. Before we get to it, don't forget to say hi to us at Gutting the Sacred Cow on all social media platforms, including guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com. And if you want to advertise with us, that's where you can find us. And of course, hey, you know we love those reviews. We post every single one of them, almost, on those five-star ratings you give us on the podcast platform of your choice. So please, if you haven't done so already, that does help. And subscribe to us on YouTube. That also helps. Without further ado, Mikey Flash is going to try and climb Mount Impossible and take down the Dark Knight.
Gather round, here's what I know. It's just that this cow has got to go. Some people kinda like it, yeah, it's trending right now.
Yeah, that doesn't
matter, cause we're good in the sacred cow.
May I have 10,000 marbles, please? Kevin Israel, name that film.
I don't know.
Our guest is Mikey Flash. Mikey Flash, do you know what film that is from?
It was, I'd like 10,000 marbles, please.
Yes. May I please have 10,000 marbles?
I can't bring it up. I feel like I've heard it before, but I cannot bring it up.
You have, and you've both seen this movie a million times. Animal House.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, geez.
I want to do an off the beat.
That's an obscure one.
Well, I'm not going to do Germans. Leave him alone. He's rolling. That's too goddamn easy. I don't play that. No, fuck.
Well done. Well done.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Thank you. Mikey Flash joins us. How you doing, sir? What's going on?
Doing just fine. Just looking forward to this and, you know, looking at a little bit of heat on Twitter and some of the social media that I was getting from picking this film, which I kind of knew. There's several films that you know are kind of like nerd sacred, you know, titles, and this is one of them. But these are points, and the things I'll say are stuff that I've always had issues with this film. So,
well, let's just tell the folks what film it is you're doing there, Mr. Excitey Pants. Mikey has chosen to do, and looks like he's broadcasting from a closet with all the boxes back there. That or he's hoarding, he's selling hot merchandise. Mikey has decided to do the absolute one of the films I thought would never would come to this day, Kevin Israel, The Dark Knight. That means now all Nolan trilogy films have been selected. I thought this was the one that no one's going to go for this one. No. Well, Mikey, you got the balls. Let's see if you can back it up. 2008, it came out. A budget of $185 million. A box office haul of $1.003 billion with a B. Turn that into 2021 money. $237.6 million budget, $1.288 billion.
That is all right.
I think it did okay, I think.
Mm-hmm. IMDb, as we all know, is a scale 1 through 10 with decimal points. Mikey, what do you think The Dark Knight scored?
It was probably somewhere in the nines, probably like maybe a 9.5, 9.6 out of 10 would be my best guess, just knowing what I know about it.
Which one? Pick one, please. We can't.
I'll straddle all I want. Let's do 9.5.
No, you won't. It's my show. 9.5. Kevin Israel, how about yourself?
9.2.
9 flat.
Ah, wow. Kevin, you were closer.
Yeah, I was gonna go a little lower too, but you threw me off.
Rotten Tomatoes, as we know, a 1 through 100 percentage base score. Kevin Israel, critics, Rotten Tomatoes, hit me with your best shot, cutie pie.
96.
Mikey,
Give it a 93.
94.
Wow.
Mikey, what did the audience give The Dark Knight, Rotten Tomatoes?
I think this was pretty even. I'm going to give it a 90. I think they gave it a 97, as I recall, or close to it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Just to be fun, I'll go 98.
94. Same score as the critics.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Quotes. Do you want to know how I got these scars? And I thought my jokes were bad. I'm not wearing hockey pads.
Yeah. Hang on. You sound like you have more walnuts in your mouth when you say that.
Kevin Israel, I left a lot out there because I know, yeah. I know the hockey pads is your favorite one.
Yeah, I do love that line. I mean, this is a surprisingly quotable superhero movie. I believe whatever doesn't kill you makes you weirder.
Stranger.
Why did I type down weird? Stranger. That's weird. What happened, fellas? Did your balls drop off?
I wrote that down, but I forgot to transfer.
Love it. Love it.
Well, hello, beautiful. And this is one of my favorite quotes, although you would never say it in passing. So you think your client, one of the wealthiest, most powerful men in the world, is secretly a masked vigilante who spends his nights beating criminals to a pulp with his fists, and your plan is to blackmail this person? Good luck.
Good luck.
I'm Mikey, glad you said that. I'm going to bring that up later.
Mikey, what do you have as quotes?
I got to think on this one. Because you guys quoted some of my favorite ones. Oh, when Maroney's sitting in the restaurants, are you going to embarrass me in front of all my friends here, Lieutenant?
Nope, they're coming with us.
There you go. Or he's just a fall guy. I'm the brains of the organization.
Nice. Five fun facts.
Five fun facts. Five fun facts for you right now. It's time for five fun more facts. Five fun facts for you right now.
Heath Ledger locked himself in a hotel room for weeks until he came up with the character which combined the stylings of Johnny Rotten, Sid Vicious, and Alex from A Clockwork Orange.
I can see it.
Yep.
The first choice for the Joker. Want to take a guess?
I think I remember something about that. I'm trying to remember who. Was it Johnny Depp?
I was going to say Johnny Depp, yeah.
Nope. It was Heath Ledger was the first choice. But.
Trick question.
I got you. Gotcha, bitch. Those who showed interest, Steve Carell, Paul Bettany, a.k.a. Vision, and my favorite choice, Adrian Brody. But Christopher Nolan told him with a nose like that, we'll keep you in mind for future films as the Penguin.
You made that up, right?
I sure did.
Okay, good. Yep.
But wouldn't that have been funny?
Funny as hell anyway.
Thank you. Listen, we like to mix shit up here. Yep. Number three, Katie Holmes opted out to do the movie Mad Money. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, Oopsie. Three Mississippi.
What was Mad Money?
There you go.
And she was never heard from again.
What is the amount of money she passed on to do this film? Considered for the role of Rachel Dawes in this one, Rachel McAdams and Emily Blunt.
Fine.
Wise lay down, Katie. Well, then again, when you're pseudo fucking Tom Cruise and you have fuck me money, you don't give a shit.
That's true. That's true.
Considered for the role of Harvey Dent, three people. I want to give you a guess each, and I'll give you a hint. One of the three turned out to be in The Avengers.
Robert Downey Jr.
No.
Chris Evans.
No. Uber blowhard Mark Ruffalo was considered for the role of Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
Matt Damon and Ryan Felipe.
Yeah, we haven't seen it
since Cruel Intentions. Since that son of a bitch snookered every dude our age with that movie. Thought we were gonna see hot lesbian action, and boy, we got nothing.
Yep.
Number five, the obvious, Dark Knight Rises was supposed to be a continuation of the Joker story until Heath Ledger tried a Golden Corral amount of painkillers.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, tis.
It would have been interesting to see him continue.
I wonder how much of that movie was the same, though. Was it going to be that the Joker takes over the city and blockades everything?
Well, part of it feels like it from the end of this, like, because he's sort of setting up that people that they keep referencing Harvey's criminals that he puts away, that Joker has some plan for them. So it kind of leads me to believe he would break them out and that would be his army, quote unquote.
You and I were destined to do this forever. I love doing his voice. Okay, kids, now let's unleash the hounds with Ask a Gutter.
Ask a Gutter. You gotta ask a gutter.
Seth Everett, who ironically did Joker on our podcast, asks, respectively, is he on crack?
Mike, are you on crack?
Not since 98.
Well, no one likes a quitter. Ed Dwyer asks, you can only recast one. Only one role. With which one and with whom? I think I know you're going to go, but which character you're going to go with.
I would probably, I'd probably obviously recast Rachel, and I put Katie back in the role because there was just much more chemistry with Christian than Maggie. I felt like she was just stiff the whole time.
As a morning boner, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Next, Eric at Eric4953 on Twitter asks, he must be a Superman guy. What's your favorite superhero movie then?
Actually, I'm a Flash guy, but I like a lot of different superhero movies. I think for me, the one of the best superhero films is and will still be Raimi's Spider-Man 2.
Up there.
Yeah, that's a good
Very
call.
Much up there.
Good call.
I have it up there. Well, I have it up there with Captain America Winter Soldier as well.
Yes, that's fantastic. Fantastic.
And Days of Future Past, I also love. Our old buddy Brandon Oglesby at Newark Night. I really hope this gutting is about the movie's cultural impact or acting or cinematography, and not just because it's a comic book movie. In your opinion, what makes a good action thriller? And is this one of them, despite your gutting?
I do think that this film has, in fact, my one of my final points I wrote down in notes for myself was that this is actually a really good action and detective story if it wasn't Batman. Like, if you took Batman out of the role and kind of took the Batman characters out of it and called them something else but ran with this story, you'd actually have a pretty damn good action story just outside of a comic book film. And I think that's why it is so popular, is because it has those aspects. There's times it doesn't feel like a comic film.
Matt Dawson at Hopper 2400. Just how, I guess, why? How can I come up with a question if I can't even come up with words? Hope this argument gets torn apart just as bad, if not worse, than the Toy Story episode. That was just...
Yeah, I saw that one, and I think I responded as amicably as I could. Just if I've got my points. If it does, you know, if I win, I win. I lose, I lose. But I like to feel, if nothing else, I came prepared.
I see that. Brandon Oglesby also writes: Batman Begins is and Dark Knight are great in their own way. One of the Batman Begins better, one of the better of the origin stories. And the story develops as it goes. Dark Knight is great on story, pacing, action, and great rewatch value. Dark Knight Rises is definitely fine, but feels jumbled compared to the other two. At Bango, our buddy Bango 2331, if your guest says one negative word about Ledger's performance, I refuse to be held responsible for whatever actions I take as a response.
I did hear noises outside the garage here, because that's where I am, the Sanford and Son garage.
I was going to say, is that why you're hiding in your basement so you somebody can find you?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's like a Unabomber type situation. It actually, the acoustics in here work wonderfully. No, I was actually going to preface that with my points, and I'll go ahead and say it now.
No. Save it for your points later, then.
I do have a response for this.
That's fine. No, that's good. And just make sure you say so when you make your points. Absolutely. At Matt 3571, Wicked Awesome. In my opinion, this was a perfect setup for the next movie in the series to be the story from The Killing Joke. Would this have been the case if Heath Ledger didn't die? I think we all know that it would be.
I don't think so. I think Kevin, okay. I think Kevin Israel there had the right idea as well. This kind of sets up some elements from The Dark Knight Rises. I think Nolan was already going there, but instead of winging in Bane, I think it was going to be Joker again, kind of bringing the anarchy, but on a much stronger level. And maybe the League of Shadows maybe would have come back in the case again to just to tie things together from the first film. But I don't feel like it would have been The Killing Joke. I feel like that would have been way off in left field.
Are Christopher, from Lord Snurts, are Christopher Nolan films overrated?
I don't think so. I mean, this, I don't think in general they're overrated. He's actually very creative, and a lot of times his approach is very innovative. So now, granted, I think they can get overplayed sometimes or over talked about a little bit sometimes, but I feel like as a director, as his approach, he is actually pretty innovative. So I don't feel like he's overrated as a director.
His last three films are very overrated. Taco Shirt Krillin, know what? I think Batman Begins by far is the best movie in the trilogy. I don't have a serious question, and I hope they gut it like a fish or a cow.
Okay.
And one more. I can't find it. I want to make sure I do. Bango writes, seriously, fuck you.
Ouch.
I told you this was going to be.
Is that with a question mark?
Yes, they talk about that later on. Where the
hell? I do require dinner first, at least, though. I mean, there's that part of it.
Oh, stop it. You don't require dinner.
At least you're a lady.
Oh, I just like food.
I have one question. Fuck you. Oh, okay. The next one, our buddy Ray Sicanis, who did last week's episode of Highlander. No fucking way. This episode is going to be like watching Wile E. Coyote run face first into the mountainside that was painted like a tunnel. No questions.
I'm down with Wiley.
Now, at Chris Orlando, I'm sure this will be addressed, but the fact that Batman has such a high moral conundrum to save, checks notes, Maggie Gyllenhaal. At Katie
Thank
Cohen.
Thank you. That's in my points.
Yeah. Oh, well. At Katie Cohen says, Will Arnett, Lego Batman is my favorite Batman. Sorry, not sorry. Okay, cute. All right. Last one. At Delvin Cox, our pal as well. Bold choice. Well, I do have a question. How do you feel about the Batman franchise as a whole? And what, in your opinion, makes a good Batman?
Oh, good job, Delvin. And I actually talked to Delvin earlier today about his opinions on this because I kind of put it out with anybody in my normal circles that wanted to talk about it because I know I'm not the only one that feels this way. I feel like, and this is probably going to make me even less popular, but I feel like as you go into like some of the Zack Snyder films and Batman from that point, I feel like that's what makes a really good Batman film. When you see his motivations, when you see how committed he is to the mission, and when you see his fighting style, something I'm going to talk about a lot tonight, but you have to kind of capture how Batman fights. And I feel like Ben's Batman has done that. And it looks to me like from the trailers that Robert Pattinson's Batman is going to do that as well. There's a rage to it. There's a drive to it. And I don't feel like this film or this trilogy really captures that. So I would look toward, I mean, I would love to see a whole film of like Ben Affleck's Batman in his prime, like what that would have looked like. But I think that would have probably been a pretty solid interpretation.
Fair. Kevin Israel, let's open the gates and let the man come out and face his attackers one on one as he swings his sword with one hand and cowers with the other. I don't fucking know. Holds a whip with the other. Let's see if we can keep the lions at bay. Kevin Israel, it's time for Mikey Flash 2.
Got the sacred
cow.
I thought we were doing the just too sweet thing. All right. No, that's okay. All right. So to start off with, and I will address this because I don't want anybody to feel like I don't. None of my points have anything to do with Ledger's performance. I feel like Heath Ledger knocked it out of the park with this role. I feel like he did something that a lot of actors don't do in their films these days. There's few that do. He took the role super seriously. He did his research and he created an interpretation that was original in every possible way. We had never seen this version of the Joker before, and he just nails it. So you won't hear a negative thing from me tonight on his performance as the character. That being said, one of my biggest points toward the end of my notes here, but I'll hit it right now, is I feel like because he did the role so well, it makes us kind of have a blind spot to a lot of the other issues with the film. It's like we just look at it and go, whoa, Ledger's Joker is amazing. But then you don't look at everything else. You're like, wait a minute, that's weird. Why they do that? So right. I feel like that sometimes clouds our judgment going in because he did such a great job, which is once again a real testament to him. So to our tweeters that said that, making sure that I don't insult him, trust me, that will not happen. But I will start, and this has nothing to do with his performance, but I think choice. Beginning of the film, I'm just going to start right at the beginning. Bank robbery scene. Great scene overall. Great sequence overall. However, the scene opens with Heath in clown makeup, holding a clown mask with a duffel bag, standing in broad daylight. And I'm thinking, okay, this may be Gotham, but nobody says anything about this. Like, he's able to just walk into a car to rob a bank in broad daylight wearing clown makeup, clearly carrying a clown mask and a duffel bag. I mean, it would take somebody not really paying any attention whatsoever to not think, well, I wonder if they're up to something or if he's just hanging around there. So that kind of caught my attention. The rest of that sequence is great, though. Next point, the several times Batman is attacked by a dog. I don't understand this. Because it's brought up, especially at the beginning, he's still wearing the original suit, the proto suit. And Lucius in Batman Begins make sure to tell him that it's a Kevlar bi-weave Nomex survival suit. Last time I checked, you know, that's the kind of thing, or cops wear less than that when they're training their police dogs, when they're training dogs that will attack you, will bite down on your arm and things like that. But when the Russian releases his dogs on Batman, he suddenly can't do anything. Like, for at least 2 or 3 seconds, he's incapacitated by a Rottweiler.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you go to SWAT school to learn all this stuff here?
I know a few police officers, and I have definitely asked the question. Actually, I did my research here. But Kevlar, well, yeah, Kevlar would protect you. And he just kind of acted like a doof. Like, oh, dogs, I don't know what to do. Dogs! Right?
So, yeah, and I thought, big dogs.
Yeah, they were big dogs, but this is Batman we're talking about. And that's even the beginning. That's before the separation of the plates, which they kind of use as an excuse why he may be more vulnerable to weaponry. But that first suit, I mean, could take an explosion and still roughly survive. Which brings me to, and I'll note this several times throughout my discussion, fighting style has gotten very clumsy in this. Really pay attention to how Batman's fighting, because he looks like he suddenly forgot everything he learned in the first film. So one thing I like about Batman Begins, it shows him specifically fighting 6 or 7 guys on all sides and defending himself with training by the League of Assassins and Ra's al Ghul. He's able to, defend himself effectively. And you see this even at the end of the film. But in this film, his fighting style just looks ridiculously clumsy, and it gets worse in Dark Knight Rises. It's like he forgot further and further and further how to throw a proper punch or how to actually fight. So, and then, of course, the next thing I run into is the cowl, the voice. Just drove me nuts, the whole film. I mean, you can't understand him. He sounds like he's chewing on walnuts the whole time. I'm guessing it's the cowl was squeezing. I mean, if you look at it, the cowl really holds his face really tight. But it just feels like he's talking, like you can't understand half of what he says unless you're really listening. And it felt like a big difference between Batman Begins and where we end up here. Like, Batman Begins, at least he was trying a Batman voice, but it didn't just sound like you couldn't understand a word he said. So there's that. And that comes right from the beginning. I'm not wearing hockey pads. It's that kind of voice. The first time I heard him at the theater, I remember going, oh my God, really?
Did you prefer the voice modulation that they did for Ben?
Yeah. I love that. I thought, how cool is that? Because that's another layer of secrecy, because somebody who knows him, somebody who might know him even a little bit, they're not going to recognize him changing his, just altering his voice. I thought the voice modulation would be a natural thing for Batman, because then you really don't know who he is, or at least unless you can recognize his face from like here to here.
Right.
And it was pretty clear when Ben's voice is in there, it's pretty clear. So I like that. Some people may have liked what I've called the diet bat cave. The little bunker inside the construction site. I wasn't a fan as much. It just looked really sparse. Like, he's got one bank of computers, and then he parks the car, and he's got the suit thing that rises from the ground, which is actually kind of cool. I like that fact. But what bothers me in this whole trilogy is that we see the proto cave Then we get this thing, this like bunker. And then Dark Knight Rises, we suddenly get a cave that he hadn't used in 10 years. Apparently they rebuilt it and then you just never used it. So it just, it's very odd to me, but I wasn't a fan of the Diet Batcave. It's like, we're going to have a Batman film. I want to see the Batcave, right? Yeah. I want to see it. I want to see it fully functioning. So next point is, I'm going down the list and I'll try to not take all night. But I wanted to come prepared. So when Harvey Dent interviewing hostile witness, and I quoted that guy earlier, says I'm the brains of the organization. He pulls a gun on Harvey. He's got a solid 4 seconds to land a shot. He goes, I'll show you hostile. And then waits like he's waiting for a punch. And then Harvey reacts the slowest I've ever seen anyone react with a right hook and just, you know, pops him one, or right cross and pops him one. But I counted. I went back and counted as I watched the film. He's got a solid 4 seconds to land a shot, not even a kill shot. He had time to like aim and maybe get a cup of coffee before he got punched. So there's definitely that. So just little things like that that I noticed. Okay. Now we come to the big one, or one of the big ones, first big ones I have. When they're at dinner with Harvey and Maggie, I'm not going to call her Rachel because it's Maggie. When they're at dinner with Harvey and Maggie, there's already talk of him wanting to quit. You know, now it's coming from Harvey, but you see Bruce not really disagree. You see his brain kind of working as in, oh, I could find somebody else to do this. And I'm thinking, okay, that's the first betrayal of the Batman mission that I see. Because to really have the character of Batman, this is a character that is 100% devoted to this mission of vengeance, this mission of stopping crime, this mission of making sure what happened to him never happens to anybody else. And it just, that moment is just odd to me. Like, he hadn't even been Batman for a year, maybe a year total, I think, between the first film and this one. And then he's already wanting to quit. It's like, wow, that lasted a long time, didn't it, Bruce? You're really committed to that. And then this film can't decide whether Bruce is smart or whether Bruce is an idiot. Like, there's several points at which it decides that he's intelligent. But then when Lucius redesigns the bat suit and he picks up the gauntlet and launches the batarangs out of the gauntlet, like, he's just a complete moron, which I know was set up as a sight gag, but it's like, there's better ways to set up the sight gag. Cause at that point you decharacterize Bruce. It's like, he's obviously an idiot that couldn't design his own suit.
Oh, what did you want? A seltzer bottle that squirts on his face? You know, a spinning bat signal on his armor, you know?
All we were missing was bat nipples. I mean, really, if you wanted the good, you know, comic sight
that
gag.
Squirted. I have nipples too, Two-Face. Do you want to milk me? Oh, wait, I'll do it right. Exactly. I have nipples too, Two-Face. Do you want to milk me?
There you go.
That was too legible, or I could understand you too much. You gotta
I have two nipples too, Two-Face.
You know, you gotta really mask it in. I'll tell you, that voice drove me nuts. I'll come back to that one several times. Okay, the Chinese extraction. Very cool sequence, obviously designed for visuals. The cinematography was neat.
What happened to Snepper? Meat. It was stunning. Meat.
It was stunning. A Snepper car. but what happened to stealth? Like, in this film, and this scene's a good example. In the first film, it's paraded over and over again. The point is hammered home that he uses stealth. He uses the darkness. He sneaks in. Yeah, now let's just crash through the window as loud as we possibly can into a room full of people with guns. Let's just do it that way. You know, we obviously got to the building, but let's not sneak in through the air ducts, or let's not, you know, sneak up behind our target so nobody even knows we're there. Use, like, Dark Knight Rises. He uses, like, you know, incapacitating darts. Now let's just crash through the window and then have to get up. And so that whole sequence for me, while it's a cool action design, watch his movements. And I mean, really watch his movements. He looks like a klutz while he's in the Chinese building. Like, he's dodging bullets. He's literally, you know, hands up, trying to run around places. I mean, it looks like he has no idea what's going on. It's like, oh, people are shooting at me. What? It's like, yeah, that's what happens when you crash through the window.
Maybe he was doing the Bat-toozy.
He might have been. It came close to this, but I mean, there's like arms flailing and it looks like he's falling over himself. So I'm just like, I don't understand that. It's like, and I don't know if it's just the new suit or whatever, or if he was still dizzy from having dropped in, but it was very not not smooth. It didn't feel like Batman at that point. I mean, it felt like a Mission Impossible type sequence, mm-hmm. which I think was the goal.
Yeah, definitely.
But once again, if it had been Mission Impossible, that would have been cool. But it didn't feel like Batman to me because there's no smoothness to it. Like there's no expertise of I'm going to sneak in here and extract this guy and they're never going to even see me. No, he flew into a room full of people with guns. He ran into gunfire. I mean, that's not exactly Batman, or at least not what has been set up. So the next one, the penthouse fight, what, you can't fight off a few thugs? There's like four people Joker walks in with and he has trouble with them. And don't get me on this. He's literally standing there when he goes, "Oh, you're going to love me." Right? He's literally standing there while Joker's got a knife to Rachel. At any point, he could have clubbed him in the back of the head and dropped him at that point. I mean, he had the advantage. For once, he uses stealth, right?
It was a great line, though.
That was a great. It's a great line.
That's a great moment. I mean, the voice again is ridiculous, but
right. Well, and it's a great superhero line delivery that he doesn't capitalize on. He gets one good punch in, and then suddenly he's like jumped on. And once again, he acts like he has no idea how to fight more than one person at a time. Like he's doing this sort of stuff and just little fight moves that don't make any sense to me.
What did you want? Did you want Arkham Knight for PS4 kind of Batman? Is that what you wanted?
I reference, if you want what I wanted, I'm going to reference the warehouse scene from Batman versus Superman.
You just made Kevin Israel rock hard between his legs.
I woke something up, did I?
But I do love that you pointed out the double punch, because for some reason that always sticks out to me in that scene. And I watched it last night and I was like, why would there ever be a reason in a fight where you would do that?
It has no effect. I mean, it would have no effect on anyone. And it's just, it's bizarre. And then if you look, the Joker pulls like a Batman 66 thing where like he grabs his henchman, turns him around and like throws him toward Batman to increase the power of the punch. Yeah. I mean, it's yeah, exactly. Biff. Yeah. I mean, so it's the most ridiculous thing, but if you're not watching closely, you'll miss it. And it's like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. But then if you really like Kevin Israel was saying, if you look real closely, you see like the double punch. You see these ridiculous choreographed fights that don't make any sense. It's like that wouldn't work. But like you look at Ben's Batman in the warehouse, literally uses stealth and then beats the ever-living hell out of what looks like 30-plus guys just unmercilessly. So that's kind of like you can't take on three or four guys. And there's a room full of people. None of them thought, oh, wait, Batman's fighting the mob. Maybe I could get involved and clock somebody in the back of the head, too. But anyway, I digress. So let's look at the Joker holding Rachel out the window. Let's look at this ridiculous scene. Very poor choice of words. And then drops her, right? So Batman has grapples. He's got all sorts of tools in his belt. He's got all sorts of ways that he could have saved her from falling and then maybe arrive back at the penthouse to fight the Joker himself. Does he do this? No. He pulls a Leroy Jenkins.
And jumps. Yes!
Leroy Jenkins! And goes right out the flipping window to catch her and then lands on a car.
I'm more impressed that it finally took 100 episodes for someone to get a Leroy Jenkins reference in there.
I'm so happy.
Me too.
This is the happiest I've been all day.
Yeah, me three.
Well, good. Because that's what, and you'll notice he does that repeatedly throughout this film. Like that's his whole offensive approach. I'm just going to throw myself at this person and hope I connect and that it accomplishes something. And I'm like, master combatant? I don't think so. But so look at this. He catches her. Yes, he saves her. He lands on a car, somehow doesn't break her back or his own by landing on a car. Yes, he's wearing armor, but she's not. And then has time to banter with her a little bit. Oh, wait, isn't the Joker still up there with a bunch of people and his thugs with guns and knives? And I'm just going to lay here with my girlfriend and talk a little bit. Or my crush or whatever, because she's so not into you. So there's that situation. So just that never made sense to me. It's like, go back for them. You know, you have grapnels, you have all sorts of ways to get back up there, but you're going to lay there for a while and chill, you know, but let's just pancake car and chill, that sort of thing. So I'm going to shoot ahead to what you were talking about. Coleman Reese You know, he tries to blackmail Batman's identity. Number one, Lucius gives it away. This is stupid. Because he even says, because Coleman Reese, if you notice, he never says anything about Bruce Wayne. Never says it. All he says is, didn't you recognize your baby out there on the evening news? Now, what are you building for him? A rocket ship? He never says Bruce Wayne. He didn't even make the assumption, at least not that I can tell. And then Lucius goes, well, so your plan is to blackmail this person? You think that your boss, one of the wealthiest, most powerful men in the world, is like, oh, thanks, Lucius. You just basically told him it was Bruce. Nice job.
Note to self, don't give Lucius Fox booze at the office Christmas parties.
Exactly. He just lets it all go.
And another thing, you know what he did? He fucked her on the conference table.
Exactly. Well, and you'll find his ass in the copy machine at some point. So we're to assume that Coleman Reese now knows that Bruce Wayne's Batman. And at no point in all this turmoil, when cops are getting killed, judges are getting killed, does he choose to try to go to the cops or the press with this information? He just hangs on to it. You know, because, yes, the blackmail threat was enough to make him not go, wait a minute, this guy's going to keep killing people if we don't know who Batman is. And I know who he is. Shouldn't I go tell the cops? So obviously it serves the story, but logically it makes no sense. It makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The funeral scene, funeral for a friend or funeral for Commissioner Loeb, who really wasn't our friend. The Joker's hiding in the honor guard, right? They're doing the honor salute. They've got their dress uniforms on. You're telling me you don't notice the guy with scars on his face next to you? He's not even wearing his makeup, but he's got these big ass scars on his mouth. You're not going to notice that the guy you train with every single day, probably in the academy or every single day in your elite group that is doing this function, you're not going to look over and go, wait a minute, that guy's got scars on his mouth. I don't know that dude. Who's that guy?
Oh, I'm Sully from Undercover Unit. That's who I am.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, you guarantee they practiced this, you know, routine before, probably with the same people in the same places. You're not going to notice this guy with scars next to you that you've never seen before. This other guy that looks completely crazy and like the polka dot man on the other side of you.
Well, forget all that for a hot sec. Yeah, well, I'll yes and you, even though I hate improv. Yes and who the fuck? He's a criminal. When is he going to learn how to do the correct spins and turn and fire and commands on all that? Where is he learning that from? I don't care how many times you've watched movies like we have or you have, and then been able to nail that cadence down to a second, you know, and then him not right. Fucking up. He's in perfect time, perfect rhythm, perfect everything. And ask the drum major below me what his thoughts would be on that, especially with the cadence and everything being orchestrated. That would that doesn't happen.
I wasn't a drum major. Thank you very much. I was a drummer. There's a difference. And I will yes and you on this one as well. I don't think the Joker would have been there at all. I don't feel that the Joker that they've set up would have been getting his hands dirty, because at the end he relishes being like, I was here. Yeah. I wasn't even there to do it. He loves having other people do the dirty work for him. So I don't think he would have been in that situation where he could have so easily gotten caught. And that always bothered me a little. Anyway, sorry, Mikey, go on.
No, that's a great point, and I appreciate that, because that's exactly what I'm thinking as well. Look at, and I remember years ago, my brother and I were discussing Batman 89, which is easily my favorite Batman film. I'm a Keaton guy, and he never gets to, like, he never fights the Joker like one-on-one until the very, very end, because he can't ever get to the guy. The Joker's not on site for most of the times when Batman shows up, or if he's there, he makes sure he's in the background and then taken off and then letting his thugs do the fighting. The Joker wouldn't be hands-on to the point where all somebody would have to do is turn over an elbow and we're clocking with a rifle butt. To do that. Not that that would stop Super Joker, which is my next point here. The chase scene. Great scene. Once again, kind of a Mission Impossible type action sequence. So Batman couldn't think of any other way to disable the truck or to disable the truck than to put his own car in front of a bazooka. That's the best you got. You've got an armored vehicle. Clearly, with missiles and other weaponry, you can't get behind a semi and shoot out the tires and bring it down. But your best shot, your best thought is, I'll just drive right up next to it and take the bazooka blast. Okay, great job, fool. You've taken the bazooka blast. Now you have no car. And now, until you eject your little motorcycle, they're on their own. You took the shot, and now you're not protecting nothing. So I always have a problem with every film thinking they have to destroy the Batmobile, like every Batman film thinking they have to destroy the Batmobile somehow. I'm like, quit blowing it up. It's a cool car. But that one bothered me because it wasn't necessary.
Not the 1966 car. They could blow that shit to Kingdom Come for all I care. That thing is terrible.
Oh, you better get some hate tweet for that. You better get some hatred for that one, man.
A little fire comes out the back. I'm so enthralled.
That car is stylish and sleek, but that's a whole other discussion for another time. But you better get some hate on that. Okay, so let's look at this. After, and it's a cool, once again, cool sequence. Batman uses his motorcycle to rope in the semi, literally turns it end on end. Part of it explodes. And the Joker walks out with no visible injuries. What? He was in the freaking cab. It flipped over on him. And he just kind of slides out. Ugh, cracks his neck and he's fine. I mean, is he Superman? I mean,
I was wearing my seatbelt.
Apparently, seatbelts save lives of psychos as well. So this is my first instance of Super Joker in this film. Like the first time he should have been injured to hell or at least be bleeding. And he wasn't. Like, there was not a drop of blood, not a bruise, not anything other than his hair being a little more wet that indicated that he had been injured in any way. Like, his hair looked like he'd been sweating. But other than that, there was no source of injury. That, what in the world? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, a scene that literally made me laugh out loud in the theater, and I think everybody turned around and got mad at me, when Batman tries to run him down with the Batpod. Once again, you're Batman. He's standing there telling you to come on. You've got the guy dead to rights, and your best thought is to try to scare him by playing chicken?
He doesn't kill people.
He wouldn't have to. But I mean, he's got a utility belt, for crying out loud. He's got weapons on the Batpod. He could have, I mean, it apparently wouldn't have killed Super Joker if he ran him over. Guy probably would have cracked his neck and gotten up again. But there's all sorts of ways he could have incapacitated him rather than just trying to like play chicken with him, which is what it looks like he did. Like he was trying to juke him into jumping out of the way, and the Joker didn't. But it just ends up, to me, looks really clunky and really silly, and it makes Batman once again look like an idiot. Like, that's the problem I have overall in this film. If you track it, you know, once again, Ledger's performance is fantastic, so we kind of ignore it, but Batman looks like a fool for at least half of this film, and then the police force looks like fools for the whole thing. They look like they can't do anything. Like, they have no idea what they're doing. So let's continue on to the other example of Super Joker. Batman beats the shit out of him, like the ever-living shit out of him. And once again, no injuries? I mean, he slams his hand down with a gauntlet. That should have broken his hand. You know, that should have put it out of commission, but yet he's using it comfortably in every scene after that.
I was high on PCP.
No. Yeah, but when you come down, you're going to feel like shit. I know. And then he slams his head on the table. That alone should have at least broken his nose or at least, you know, caused some sort of cranial injury as hard as he hits him. It's a metal table and he slams his face on it. And then once the Joker kind of gets in his head, which is a cool scene, I will say, like the way Joker gets in his head and dissects him when Batman's supposed to be the one kind of interrogating, but then the Joker totally turns the tables on him and messes with his head. Batman goes ape and just beats him senseless, just beats him down, locks the door with a chair, just punches him relentlessly, slams him around. Once again, he's on the floor kind of giggling about it. He looks like maybe for the first time he's in some pain, but once again, no visible injury. And by the time he goes into the next sequence to go kidnap Lao and then escape, he's just fine. He would have had a broken neck. Right? Broken hand, broken neck. He would have had several very, very hardcore injuries.
Did you have the same problem with Thanos in Avengers Endgame or Infinity War when he was taking beatings by the Hulk and other Avengers?
Yes, I did. There was, once again, no visible injury of any kind.
Kevin Angel just smirked and goes, gotcha, bitch.
Yep, he just walked
away. No, I disagree with you. Thanos had the Infinity Stones. He wasn't going to by anything.
Before he had all the stones, I'm saying. Before he hit maybe one or two.
You have a good argument there. However, the Joker did not have Infinity Stones. All he had was a tailored suit. So, and you're telling me the cops are so inept that they can't scan his fingerprints? Surely, if he was ever in the military or in the system at any point, they would have figured out, they would have at least had a hit.
Well, they did. They split Batman, scanned his fingerprint in the bullet. It was on the bullet casing, and they said his name is Melvin something or whatever.
That was a plant. It was Melvin White, but it wasn't him. It was somebody else.
No. Yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like, you think they could have figured that out.
Okay.
So, and then in the hospital, the changeover from that after, well, let's go to, hang on, before the hospital, let's go to Two-Face. Half of his face gets in the oil, right, from the drums. And then when the building explodes, somehow that fire only just happens to stop right here. It goes, wait, no, that didn't get doused in oil. I'm not going to burn you over here. Skin burns either way. I mean, yeah, the oil and gas is going to make it burn faster, but it's not just going to stop on half your face.
I will say, I know this just because you brought it up. That's in my notes. They completely eschewed the storyline in the comic books and everything else where he had the acid thrown in his face. So that's one of my parts. I'm like, kind of like in Batman 89, where it's the Joker kills his parents. Like, it doesn't work like that. So yeah,
I remember when I saw the movie and his face was in the gasoline, I thought that was the acid. I thought that's what they were going to get at. And then I was like, oh, it was just burnt.
Well, to add insult to injury, earlier in the film, they have the courtroom scene. Sal Moroni is there. Now, in the comics, Moroni was the guy that did it.
Right.
Tossed acid on his face. And as I've seen, you know, as the comics, depending on which comic you read, he ends up covering half his face with like his files folder that he, you know, or his notes he's carrying. And that's why it only splashes over here, because he actually blocks half of it himself.
Right.
But in this case, it was like just random. Oh, it only went on half of his face. So therefore, that's the only part that's going to get burned.
Cool.
And that just... Not down with that.
All right.
And
land this plane, bring this baby home.
Okay. All right. I'll finish it up. The last thing, and this once again kind of comes to a fighting situation. I'm gonna end it with the Joker versus Batman at the top of the building. I actually talked to he didn't confirm I could quote him, so I won't quote who I talked to, but a friend on Twitter who has trained combatant. Trained in several different fighting styles. I asked him. I said, "Okay, you have."
Ooh, is it Frank Dukes from Bloodsport?
No, it's Fred Dukes from Wolverine Origins.
The Blob.
The Blob, exactly.
You got Kevin Israel Hart again. That's twice in 20 minutes. Well done, sir.
Thank you. But I asked him. I said, "Okay, as a trained combatant, as somebody who is trained in multiple fighting styles." I said, how would Batman fare against a wild man wielding a crowbar? Because once again, the dogs, you got the freaking dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's got two of them, and it takes him a good 5-10 seconds to get the dogs off of him when he's still wearing armor, for gosh sakes. But then you get the Joker, who's literally just swinging the crowbar and hitting him like this. I mean, he's like an ape. And so I asked, I said, would that honestly be effective? He said, no. He said, for somebody who's been trained the way Batman has been portrayed to be trained, the Joker might get one or two shots in with the crowbar, and then it's over after that point. He gets the hell beaten out of him by, you know, a trained combatant. They'd be disarmed and brought down. So just kind of bring it all together. The lack of Batman's fighting skill, plus all the points I brought in. I didn't even get to the ending, but I'll go ahead and just kind of finish it up here. But I have more, but I feel like I've proven, at least on my end, what I feel like are solid points for why this isn't as great a film sometimes as we remember it to be.
Give me a number 1 to 10.
1 to 10 as far as good films.
What do you think? Yeah, 1 to 10 in the sense of what do you rate this film
yourself? I still rate it about an 8 out of 10, but that's purely based on Ledger's performance.
What? 8 out of 10, and you try and gut this? Boy, the listener's gonna fucking kill you.
Bring it on. I got nothing to lose. Clearly, look where I am. I got nothing to lose. But no, I only give the score based on Ledger's performance, because it did change the game. And there's a lot of things about this film that did change the game. But, you know, as far as superhero films go, but it was not a Batman film. And I feel like Bale's Batman fell incredibly short in this film, not to mention the switchover love interest and everything I said.
Rank the Batman. Not only I have to do this. Rank the Batman films as you see them.
As I see them,
please.
I will. Now I'll always start with Batman 89 and Returns because they set the standard as far as I can tell. Yeah. Oh. You give me that look. I don't give a flip.
80 Returns does not hold up. We did on this very podcast, and I implore you to go back and listen to that episode, because that was the first episode.
I hate to agree with him, but he's right.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. I'll go back and take a look at it.
I'll let you slide on 89. I'll let you slide. You do what you want. 89, fine. So, but Returns, no, I will stand firm on that. What's after Returns?
Okay, after Returns is
Batman and Robin. Batman got it.
You're not sending me to the cooler.
holy metal, Batman. No, the metal, it has holes.
Yeah.
I will tell you this. My next one will be Batman Begins, because I feel like, once again, that set a standard. Like, Batman 89 sure. set one standard for a generation. Begins set another standard for how Batman would be viewed after that. I will say, if you view Batman and Robin just as a comedy, it's actually not a it's kind of an enjoyable film if you view it as a piece of comedy shtick, not as a serious Batman.
It's terrible from top to bottom. I know, even if you watch it in just for shits and giggles, Mystery Science Theater 3000, it's fucking terrible. But
yeah,
it's a horrible film.
But I can't even enjoy it on an unironic sense. I can't even enjoy it then. I can't even.
You have to appreciate the one-liners just for the terribleness of it. And after that, for me, comes and I consider it a Batman film, comes Batman vs Superman, because I feel like that, once again, now you have Batman defining a generation again. And then I put probably Dark Knight and then Rises after that, because Rises is just not a good film.
How the fuck do you give Dark Knight an 8, but you put it after goddamn Batman versus Superman, which was a manatee abortion?
Well, see, I've actually done a manatee abortion, and that film wasn't anything like that.
Are you Jacques Cousteau's long-lost cousin? Sweet!
Never set me up. no, as I said, and the listeners can be upset if they want to, that's fine. I give The Dark Knight its credit as far as Ledger's performance goes, and that's why I gave it kind of a score that it did. I'm not going to, like, trash as a rating. Now, I will gut it because, as I said at the beginning, take Ledger's performance away and you don't have a very solid film. There's a glaring list of things that just look really clumsily done, but his performance overshadows that.
Okay. So an 8 out of 10. I'm going to let the resident comic book nerd go second, because he's just going to mop up everything else that has to. That's his role on this. So I'm going to go first, Kevin Israel. These notes brought to you by guttingthesacredcow.com, where every single day we've got fantastic articles like our favorite. And I'm so tickled to death that so many people are bringing That Doesn't Happen, one of our favorite blog posts, into the lexicon. It makes me smile. It makes Kevin Israel smile. And of course, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com. If you want to say hi, or if you want to advertise with us, let us help you build up your product or service. Notes. E.T., Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, and The Dark Knight are the four most perfect movie scores ever in the history of cinema. Don't make a face. Ingest it and go, he's right. The last thing I'm doing if I'm William Fichtner in the bank robbery scene is chasing after two robbers who have automatic pistols when all I have is a meaty, bitty widow shotgun. That doesn't happen. That's like a two-chamber. It looks like it. I'm not a weapon expert. Don't come at me, Bango, officer.
You are a two-pump expert, so.
As long as I come, that's all that matters.
Ooh.
The Tumbler is cool, but we all know 1989 Batmobile is the best one ever, so we're just going to move right the fuck along. There's no one who's going to argue that. Batman threw that dog in the parking lot battle like he was Patrick Swayze throwing a Doberman at Keanu Reeves during the street scene in Point Break. Dog Holy throw. Shit. But you like that reference? That's a good one. Watch that film again, and I goof all every time. I go, he just stopped to throw a fucking dog at him. Dog throwing seems to be all the rage in the movies these days. Hopefully they have some dog throwing in the new Spider-Man and Matrix movies. All right. First off, you can completely buy that Bruce Wayne was into Katie Holmes in Batman Begins before Tom Cruise Shang Tsung'd her of all her goodwill.
Nice.
Thank you. But I'll be goddamned if I believe that Bruce Wayne and Harvey Dent are going to bang Shirley Hemphill before fighting over Maggie goddamn Gyllenhaal.
That's right.
Bruce Wayne wrote the book on cock blocking. Signed, sealed, and delivered. Why? A, he brings a much hotter girl to crash a dinner date with the I don't really care, devil may care attitude. But then taking the entire ballet on a ship so Dent could not take Rachel on a date is the ultimate fuck you power move. What's going to top that? Buying up all the condoms, birth control, and Plan B in Gotham City? You think when Batman brought Lao back from Hong Kong on a 16-hour flight, he gave him his full life story? It all started when my parents got shot outside of a theater. Dot, dot, dot. The Joker video where he kills the Batman wannabe and says, "Look at me!" That's the first thing I say while having sex doggy style. While grabbing her hair, lovingly.
She says, "That's not what you're paying me for. Just keep going."
Stop it. I'm good looking.
I'm not paying you to talk.
I don't have to pay for sex. I'm good looking and married now. The exploding car with all the Joker cards. That was a great touch. I fucking loved that. That was amazing. And I loved, loved, loved how he changed the story. "Do you know how I got these scars?" I loved. Every time was a different response. Is the porno version of The Dark Knight, "Do you want to know how I got these cock warts?"
Mm-hmm. What's wrong with your brain?
I need to write jokes.
I was kind of wondering. Golly.
I laughed so hard in the theater opening night at midnight because I'm a man of the people. When the guy two seats away said during the Jim Gordon quote unquote death scene, "They killed Gordon. How can he become commissioner?" Because he's not dead. Eric Roberts in the club scene saying, "What makes you think I want to hear you talk?" Said by every single guy who's ever set foot into a club. The ongoing internal battle with towing the line where the Joker consistently tests Batman is so great. Having sex with Maggie Gyllenhaal evokes the same emotion for me as having sex with a beanbag or a couch cushion. There is little about her character that is redeeming or attractive to me. The Joker firing the shotgun right next to that hillbilly while in that truck would have sent his eardrums flying and flying out and landing directly in the middle of Hazard County. He should have yelled, pulling the trigger. Or we could have avoided the whole underground chase scene. All they had to do, the cops in the van, is make a left and drive down the wrong way of a one-way street topside and avoid that fire truck that was on fire and not go down below. That was the whole point. We're going to stay.
I don't think they're going to get pulled over. They're cops.
Right. And there was no oncoming traffic because the city of Chicago shut down for filming. Thank you. When he's in prison, the Joker is dressed like a cruise ship comic in the 90s. Not that I'd ever set foot on a cruise ship. I have higher standards than that. That's just a guess of mine. Batman and the Joker scene in the interrogation room is top-notch dialogue. Just as top-notch as Captain Harris and Proctor looking for a salad bar in Police Academy 4. Thank you.
"Don't you ever touch my balls again."
"I don't see a salad bar. Look, sir, maybe they serve seafood." Thank you. I love Police Academy 4, and it's good to see somebody else who has the same amount of affinity for it. An exploding cell phone in the chest was a great touch, much more believable than an exploding shark that lets go because of shark repellent in a helicopter.
Bat shark repellent. Thank you very
bat,
much.
It's different. You got to have the bat.
Excellent. At the two-hour mark, I shall admit, this film does slow down with the bombs on the ferries. We don't need the exercise in humanity. Thank you. We just want Batman fighting the Joker at this point and then landing this plane at 2 hours and 15 minutes long. You mean to tell me that Debo from Friday is not going to press that button on the ship and blow everybody to kingdom come? You mean to tell me that regular people aren't detonating a boat of criminals? Move out of the way. I'll do it myself, guys. I'll gladly bite the bullet. That doesn't happen. I love the final dialogue between the Batman and Joker. "I can't kill you, and you can't kill me. We'll be doing this forever." If that didn't send shivers up your fucking buttholes in the movie theater, you are not alive. The final scene with Dent and Gordon's family is completely superfluous. I get it. They were setting up the Dark Knight storyline, and they had to have him as a hero. But, they could have dropped him off a ledge 20 minutes earlier, and then Batman goes, "Oh, I did it." As they went to discover the body. No, we didn't need that whole Sophie's choice. Pick your son, pick the coin, whatever. No. I mean,
see, I didn't get to that, but I had a whole point on that. It didn't have to be Batman. They could have said the Joker did it. Nobody would have known otherwise.
There we go. Another completely fair option.
Yep.
Commissioner Gordon is a real piece of shit. He has put his family through the ringer and then some. How does the wife stick to him after he pretends to be dead and then has a lunatic put a gun to his kid's head? What's his encore? Making him use chopsticks to do open heart surgery while standing on a rotted wooden plank above a shark tank? Jesus Christ, Jim.
And how does Batman solve that problem? With the Leroy Jenkins.
Oh. Don't make me laugh again, because I will.
There it is.
When I saw this in the theater the first time, I said, self, this is one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. And I walked out blown away. I saw it the second time in the theater. Didn't change my tune. I own the DVD. I own the Blu-ray. I own the digital copy. This, without question, is the greatest superhero film of all time. The storyline is fantastic. The performances are brilliant. The score, as I said earlier, is stratospheric. This film is as close to perfection as you could draw it. And I would have given it a 10 if they would lop off 15 to 20 minutes on it of this. Otherwise, this is flawless. This is one of the you make good points. I'm not going to disagree with you. Those are some ticky-tack, nitpicking parts, but I'll buy them. They're all fair. I thought this is one of the films that would never face an attack on this fine podcast, but we've been wrong before, haven't we, Kevin Israel?
Oh, indeed.
But just like those others who've decided to march up the mountain with torches in hand, they too have met an immovable object, us and this film. The epitome of the remote test. The remote test for you, Mikey, is a film that you stumble upon at any point on cable, beginning, middle, or end, and you drop the remote and go, I know what I'm doing for the next X amount of minutes. This film embodies the remote test. 9 out of 10. Kevin Israel, wow. You're surprised.
All right. So I'll ask you guys to indulge me for a minute or two. I haven't watched this movie all the way through in a while. This is definitely a remote test type movie. So last night when I got to watch it through again, I was trying to, my wife and I got to talking about it because she came in later in the movie and she was like, oh, what happens in this one? And I said, and I just started explaining the plot. And I realized writing a log line for this movie would have been very difficult. So I tried, and again, indulge me for maybe a minute and a half, because here's the log line for the movie. So the mob is trying to get rid of Batman while hiding their money from the new DA. They hire the Joker to kill the Batman, but the Joker wants to topple the organized crime syndicates and send Gotham into chaos. Meanwhile, the accountant the mob hires to hide their money is a Chinese national who just happens to be doing business with Wayne Enterprises. The Chinese guy flees to China where the DA can't get him, but Batman travels to China to get him back to Gotham. Meanwhile, the Joker is plotting the death of Gotham officials while corrupt cops who are working for the mob are feeding him information. Joker's plot to kill the mayor is foiled, but the Commissioner Gordon dies. Oh, Jim Gordon becomes commissioner later. The Joker sets his sights on the new DA, who happens to be dating Bruce Wayne's ex, a huge HR violation, by the way, and wants to work with Batman because reasons. While transporting the Chinese accountant for some apparent plot point reason the Batman stops the Joker from hijacking the police motorcade, and Gordon puts a gun to Joker's head. Surprise, he's still alive. That's about half the movie. That doesn't include the DA becoming a supervillain, Bruce Wayne inventing a Big Brother-esque spy tech kind of machine, a whole blackmail plot, implanted cell phone bombs, or the Joker kidnapping two boats of people and making them try to murder each other. This movie is so complicated, it's insane. And this, I loved this movie, and I still do. But here's the thing, and I blame him again. This podcast for so much. First of all, I do think Nolan movies are incredibly overrated. Visually, always stunning.
Right.
The action in Nolan movies, amazing. He gets the best actors and gets the best performances out of them. But his plots are ridiculous. And this is no different. They took what could have been a really easy and fun plot, and he turned it into this partial heist, partial mob movie, partial political intrigue movie, romance. He worked so much into this movie
you didn't know what you were watching until you got to the scene. And that brings me to the point, to my point about why that what makes this movie great, and also what's its downfall to me in some ways. The scenes in this movie are amazing. If you take each individual scene, fantastic. The opening scene, the heist, that 3-minute heist scene was better than the entire movie Red Notice. I would have watched that heist scene 10 times if I didn't have to watch Red Notice. Like, that was a movie I would have watched. The scene where Joker first approaches all the criminal syndicates in that is one of my favorite scenes in movies.
Oh yeah.
I love that scene. When he walks in going, and then he makes the pencil disappear. Fucking amazing. Whole scene. And I love when he goes, and the TV, I know squealers. He's a squeal. That scene is fucking amazing. And they're all great. Even the scene where they first reintroduce Batman, they show him fighting the dogs off. Although apparently Batman won't kill people, but he'll fucking kill dogs. He doesn't give a fuck about dogs. That is not in his moral code.
And somewhere John Wick's taking notes.
Right. but each individual scene is so fucking good. And the scene where Fox explains to the blackmailer how bad it is. I mean, the dialogue is so good, and he makes the scene make the point that he wants it to make. But when you take these scenes all together, I wonder how many people have actually gone back and rewatched this whole movie over and over again. Because I know, and Kevin and I talk about it all the time, whenever the movie's on cable or anything, any scene it's on, I'll be like, oh, I got to watch this because this is a great scene. So many great scenes, but I think the plot was just so convoluted and so ridiculous. And then when it gets to the point of the boat, the two boats, that's a whole nother movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a whole movie into itself. Talking about people trying to, like, you could picture like a 90s thriller, action thriller about two boats with bombs on them. And Keanu Reeves is trying to stop them from blowing each other up.
Like, I was going to say Under Siege, but okay.
Yeah, right.
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 Well, it's like he had a bunch of notes on the page and was like, oh, I could have this and this and this and this.
Right.
But it's like they're all their own sequences. And this is, for me, this isn't a remote film. Now, I would watch it, but it's such an investment because it's not a film I can drop in the middle of. I feel like I'm getting the film. Like, I have to start at the beginning and I have to watch it through. There's other films, like, if it's on, I get it midway through and I'm like, oh, I'm going to sit here and watch this. But with this one, I'm like, no, I'm not going to watch it midway through. I got to watch it from the beginning.
Yeah. Well, and I got to tell you, like, the Harvey, there's a lot of storylines in this that I could have done without. You're right about Maggie Gyllenhaal. And I don't know if it was much just as her as an actress or just the character. I didn't care about any of that romantic three-way that they were in. I did not care about Harvey Dent at all. When Harvey Dent becomes Two-Face, it's almost, there's no character development. There's nothing that gets him there. He just loses. I understand you're upset. Unfortunately, millions of people have lost other people in horrible ways, but they don't become supervillains. Like, there was nothing that got him to the point of being a supervillain. And by the way, and this is a nitpicky point, but his face, I understand that they were like, oh, we can do some great CGI and make his face look really fucked up. But it was like too fucked up. He wouldn't have been alive for that. Well, sorry about that.
There we go.
He wouldn't have been alive for that. He would have been shocked the entire time if that much of his muscle, and he would have had an infection. Like, he would have died. He would have died. There was no way he was surviving. There's no like, oh, I don't want painkillers or skin grafts. First of all, I don't think you get to make that call. Like, he would have been unconscious, and they would have been like, we need to do this or he's gonna die. Like, you don't get to wake up and be like, hey sir, can we make you look like a human again, or do you want to look like a zombie for the rest of your life? But
right.
I genuinely just didn't care about him. And here's what gets to one of my other problems, and I've said this twice before on this podcast because we've done the other two movies. I don't like Christian Bale as Batman. He's not a good Bruce Wayne. He's a very lackluster, boring Bruce Wayne who has no personality. Bruce Wayne's supposed to be charming and fun and a little over the top because he's so far from Batman. And I've said this and I'll say it again. Bruce Wayne is the mask and Batman is who he is. That's the irony with Batman. He's pretending to be Bruce Wayne. And so he has to act like something that he doesn't really know how to be. And Batman is who he really is. And you don't get that at all
with Christian Bale. Christian Bale is just a good looking guy who gets to put on a cool suit. Christian Bale should be James Bond. I don't know why Christian Bale has never been in the mix, talked about being James Bond. He'd be a great James Bond. He is not a good Batman. And the voice, and I know that Nolan wanted him to do more voice in each movie, apparently he told him. I never liked it.
What do you mean they're not as a voice?
All of that said,
Sean Connery wants to be Batman now? Did I just hear that right?
That's what your mother said last night, Kevin.
But all of that, and any of the little issues that I have with the movie, especially as far as this plot goes, and again, Christopher Nolan has had some ridiculously complicated plots. This movie is carried so much on the back of Heath Ledger's incredible performance. Anytime Heath Ledger is on the screen, he steals whatever scene he's in, and I think he almost makes Christian Bale look that much worse. Because he's so good. He captures and creates this character, and you love him. This movie should have been Joker. Like, this should have just been a Joker movie. I could have, because you almost, when they came out with the Joker, it was almost like, could I watch a whole Joker movie? I could have with Heath Ledger. Absolutely. And I do agree with you, Mikey. I think if you took Heath Ledger out of this, you would have had a much more difficult time saying that this was such a great movie. Anybody would have. He makes this movie and he pulls it all together. And that's why it kills me that he didn't get the chance to do the third one. Cause I think that third one, which was the weakest of the trilogy, could have probably been the greatest of the trilogy. And we never got to see it, but this is still a great movie. I do think people might overrate it a little bit because I think the plot is just a fucking mess. And there were points where I was watching it and I kept looking at my wife going, the whole thing with the bullet is a great example of Christopher Nolan over Christopher Nolaning.
Yes.
What did he do to get the fingerprint off the bullet? He made a mold and then injected it and then shot it and then took it apart and put it in a computer and did this and did that and did this and that and the fingerprint. What? And I,
but yet he wasn't smart enough to do it by himself. He still had to go to Fox after that. Right. And say, okay, but he was all this.
But apparently he was smart enough. He was smart enough to make that crazy machine that could turn cell phones into bat sonar.
Right.
It's crazy.
Now, if I can make a point, you're right. And part of this also, and I forgot, I egregiously apologize that I didn't mention that with tied with Batman 89 for my number one Batman film is Mask of the Phantasm. It's an animated film, but
it's good.
But it is a tremendous film. And you'll notice that what they tried to do with Maggie Gyllenhaal in this is kind of like what they tried to do to, you know, in The Mask of the Phantasm, like Bruce questioning the mission based on love. But The Mask of the Phantasm just does it so much better. Like in the beginning, it was, do I put on the mask or do I not? I didn't count on being happy. I mean, that line alone in that film makes it a masterpiece.
Yeah, I agree. So look, in the end, this movie is an 8.5 for me. I was happy that we got to watch it. I enjoyed watching it, but I do think watching, and we've watched a number of Nolan movies, and I know we're going to watch more. He just over Nolans himself. He just goes fucking crazy. And this movie didn't need to be so convoluted because you have great characters and you have great storyline that you could have just gone with that. He just works in all this shit, makes it so complicated. So if it wasn't for that, it would probably be a 9 or 9.5 for me. But for me, it's an 8.5.
Fair. 8, 8.5, and 9. Here we are again. They would have called those last 20 minutes. This would have been it. This would have been, there's no arguing that. Let's see what the dickheads who always want to use a lot of words and never have anything to say behind those words say with any meaning. And those are the critics' 5-star reviews.
Critics, 5-star reviews. Critics, 5-star reviews. Critics, 5-star reviews.
A masterpiece. Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight is not only one of the best comic book movies you'll ever see, but also one of the best movies of all time. It's in my top 10, kids. Not just a perfect Batman movie, but darn near a perfect movie, full stop. The Dark Knight ought to be played on the biggest screen possible and played like a loud Led Zeppelin song. Christopher Nolan's skyscapes, helicopter shots, and views from the 200th floor in IMAX are at its best. This may seem like faint praise, but about the highest compliment I can give Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight is, I lost my spot, that I can give Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight right now is to say that there are many long stretches during which I didn't even realize it was a superhero movie.
That's Mikey's point.
Critics, one-star reviews, or as we'll call them tonight, people who just don't fucking get it.
Critics, one-star reviews. Critics, one-star reviews.
It seems almost cruel to take beloved child archetypes and turn them into projections for adult angst. You see, I think there's just too much psychology and not enough pop. It's possible to be serious, you know. You know, if this asshole would have ended this review with, why so serious? I would have given him a head nod and a thumbs up like, yeah, man, I'm with that.
Yeah.
Flawed and overrated. Just like your mom's box is what I say back to that critic.
Wow.
Fuck them. The Dark Knight is neither a good nor serious film. I think it's very fucking serious. It is ill-conceived and poorly done, overlong, confusing, and emotionally muddy. The generation of consumers who swallow this pessimistic sentiment can't see past the product to its debased morality. Instead, their excitement about the Dark Knight's dread, parentheses, that teenage thrall with subversion, inspires their fealty to product. And now, kids, our latest pseudo-intellectual who thinks Adrian Brody is the second coming of Christ. Amazon, 5-star reviews.
Amazon, 5-star reviews. Amazon, 5-star reviews come for you.
Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne is nothing more than a placeholder for Batman. Michael Keaton did well with the brooding, angry, insular world of a millionaire crime fighter, but Bale's Wayne lacks any true joy, charisma, joy de vivre, and he's just marking time before the next time he puts on the suit. It's really Ledger's film. He's the reason to watch. He drives the plot. He has the best lines. He is the protagonist. He plays the character if he's consistently on meds, flipping out only one time in the film, and when he does it, it's pretty chilling. If Cesar Romero played the role as Bozo the Clown, Ledger played it as John Wayne Gacy. I'm pretty new to the Kindle Fire, 4 weeks now, but I'm catching up. I'm up to 10 videos on my Fire. I just watched The Dark Knight once again, but this time on my Kindle Fire. Whoa, it brought back some good memories. Signed, Jeff Bezos, head of the Kindle Fire promotion team. Talking about working a product placement, and my God, I really thought they couldn't match Batman Begins. I'm a huge nerd. I mean, Batman film. Now the ones with Arnold and Halle, those were awful. I mean, really awful. No one's putting Catwoman in this series, guys. Let's cut the horse shit.
Yeah.
The first one with the Penguin was very good, but very outdated. It was the second one, stupid. But these last two, wow. The Dark Knight was phenomenal. Heath, RIP, did an amazing job. He captured the Joker better than I could have imagined. Bale, always good. Next one. This one's for us. My only complaint is Rachel. She doesn't really seem to be like the Rachel to me. While Katie Holmes was a good Rachel, a believable Rachel, simple, kind of pretty, yet elegant and strong. Unfortunately, Maggie Gyllenhaal was used in The Dark Knight. Maybe I just don't like the actress, but she was not all what I had envisioned. She's just sort of sad looking, not in a good way.
Oh, ouch.
Jeez.
Walked right by Maggie Gyllenhaal a couple years in the city. She's tall, taller than I thought she would be. What did I like? Everything. What didn't I like? Nothing. This movie is not just the greatest movie of all time, but certainly finds its place in the list of all-time great movies. Screenplay, acting, casting, narration, music and score, editing, picturization. Every department has just nailed its role to perfection.
Mm-hmm. Trying to look that one up. Picturization.
Yeah. Someone just didn't look up and go, oh, wait, that's cinematography. Amazon. Maybe
on social media is a cinematography expert.
Maybe. Amazon, 1-star reviews.
Amazon, 1-star reviews. Amazon, 1-star reviews. Amazon, 1-star reviews. Amazon.
didn't remember how bad the movie was, just remember the actor. Next one. Batman didn't get naked. Bummer. Signed, Kevin Israel.
I knew that was you.
Grandson.
He got in all that shape. You might as well see what he's working with.
Yeah. Let's see that dong. Affleck showed his in fucking Gone Girl, right? Let's see what kind of hammer he's swinging. Grandson is too young to watch. Made a mistake. Would like a refund. Excuse me, waiter. This soup is too hot. I want a refund. What asshole is letting their kid watch it? Actually, this asshole let his daughter watch the first 20 minutes or so of the film. I let my daughter watch, and then she was like, he's scary. And then I was like, that's good. This is the part where it turns anyway, so I was going to kick you out. But yeah, she liked it, though. The plot hopped around like crazy and never got me invested. Too much boring action and not enough character development. Took itself too seriously.
Boring action.
Here's someone who's painfully dumb. Had to leave a bad review, but the bat pod came busted in half and a few other pieces broken too.
Oh, that sucks. I'm sorry.
The bat pod. Yeah. I'm going to assume that the bat pod was part of the promotion that came with the Blu-ray or DVD.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess.
Oh, wait. Can I ask? I'm glad. I hate going back. One of the things that I thought of while Mikey was talking, or maybe Kev, you made the point. So he drives around in that bat pod, the bat motorcycle. I don't know why we just don't call it the bat cycle the whole time.
Right.
But in the next movie, when Bane invades whatever, and he takes like 10 tumblers from Wayne Enterprises. Why didn't he just go get another tumbler? It was like that was the only one. He could have gone and gotten another one.
Well, they even show there's like three or four at least. I mean, there's a couple more.
Yeah.
He hasn't painted them black yet. Maybe that's why, because he only likes them when they're black.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Knowing about the 2.5 hours length, I could not justify watching more than half an hour of this talkative, violent, and meandering routine. Signed, Happy Gilmore fan, 3462. The disc did not work, but I was refunded quickly.
So was your mom.
Heyo. Another bogus HBO movie advertised as having closed captioning when it does not. If you are hearing impaired, HBO is just money wasted.
Oh my God.
This person has a vendetta against HBO, but then goes on Amazon and writes the review. I just want to let that unpack itself for a moment or two.
Yes.
Hey, Domino's, your pizza fucking sucks. Sir, this is a Verizon store.
The felony to tease the order box.
Kevin Israel, did Mikey Flash gut the sacred cow?
First of all, Mikey, thank you for coming on and sharing a very unique look at your thoughts on this legendary movie. This is an easy one for me to decide because he gave it an 8. So, no, he did not gut it.
Just gonna say
but that said, you did make a lot of very good points. And I agree with almost everything you said. But I just think I think Nolan just knocked it out of the park in so many ways with this movie that even the faults that I consider now more glaring, they're just drowned out by, again, Heath Ledger's incredible performance and just the way that all the scenes are all set up. Every scene is just incredible to watch, and it's each scene is like its own mini movie. So awesome job, but this one's going to stand the test of time.
Okay, well, thanks for the chance and thanks for having me on. I mean, I know it's an odd thing, but I know I gave it a higher score just because I didn't want to disrespect Ledger's performance at no point, even if I'm gutting everything else about it, which I really was. That part I don't want to take away from it, and that scores pretty highly just because I don't see that caliber of acting or that caliber of characterization from a lot of people or from a lot of actors in films these days.
Absolutely.
This cow lifted its legs and aimed its udders in your face and just squirted milk all in that bald dome of yours. The cow stands, my friend. I agree with Kevin Israel. Yes, but listen, I appreciate the shit out of you for having the balls to try and stand on this hill and face arrows from every direction. As I mentioned with you right before Kevin Israel came on, Don Jameson did that with The Matrix and Die Hard and gave them both a 0 on a 1 to 10. So,
oh, wow.
The balls on Don. You can stand side by side with the letter.
Don doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I figured it was worth my best shot.
You gave it a hell of a shot. You gave it a hell of a shot. This was a fool's errand at best, but you did not embarrass yourself. I shall say that. Mikey, tell everybody what you're up to, where we can find you, what you want to promote, whatever. Shout it all out.
All right. Sounds good. I'm on all over the interwebs, as people say. Best place to find me is on Twitter at TheMikeyFlash. I'm a music composer as well. So if you ever need music for projects, podcasts, videos, you know, if you're tired of YouTube taking your video down because, oh, the music is copyright, well then, you know, I'm your guy, you know, come find me and I'll take care of you on that. I'm also on Instagram at Speedforce Music. You can find me there. That's my music production company. I have a sound library at soundcloud.com/Speedforce Music. You can find it there as well. I'm also on YouTube. Just search for Speedforce Music. I do a lot of remixes and of comic themes and 80s cartoon themes and things like that. So I'm all in the nerd and nostalgia veins. So should be able to find me pretty easily.
Can you remix the Batman and Robin soundtrack to make that film better?
I would give it my best shot, actually. But I will say I have two projects that I have been contracted to do recently that I'm sworn to secrecy on. But
why bring them up?
Because they're exciting. I'm real excited to be a part of them. But the minute they do, I'll definitely drop those.
Yeah, let us know. Absolutely.
So you guys can know. But I'm really excited about those. But yeah, you can find me anywhere there. If you ever need help with those music projects, let me know, and I'm happy to work with you.
Awesome. Love it. Kevin Israel, yourself?
KevinIsrael.com for comedy and upcoming dates. I'm taking a couple of weeks, maybe 2 months off from stand-up for baby birthing stuff. And then I'll be back on the road. But in the meantime, we'll be dropping more episodes of Gutting the Sacred Cow. And when we do, please leave us a 5-star rating and a quick couple sentence review on your podcast platform of choice. We'll beat this horse to death just like we got these cows, because God damn it, we need it. We appreciate the help and it means something to us. So keep giving us some good reviews and some 5-star ratings, and we'll keep producing awesome content for you.
That is the plan. Thank you, sir. KevinGoatee.com for more hilarity, general tomfoolery and shenanigans, NFL picks. Instagram, Kevin Goatee, where you see my daughter eat desserts or cookies or whatever. Well, I give my said picks. And then Kevin Israel hit all the keynotes there. So I'll just end on by saying guttingthesacredcow.com, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com. And we're going to get the old live show going again. Get ready for it to come see us in person. Hopefully sooner than later. We're working on the details of when and where. But I can tell you it will be Bill and Joanne back again to do another live show. So look for that somewhere up in North Jersey. Kevin Goatee, Kevin Israel, Mikey Flash, thank you so much, sir, for hanging out.
Thank you for having me.
You're a gentleman and a scholar, and we appreciate it.
Thanks, Mikey.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
See you later.